I just want to share with you on Labor Day weekend about the vision of Kingwood Church. What is the vision of Kingwood Church? Well, God gave us about 6 weeks before COVID hit. How many of you remember that? It's like 100 years ago, or was it yesterday? I can't tell. But it seems like it wasn't that long. You know what I mean? My time orientation is all messed up. 6 weeks before COVID hit, God gave our church the vision to be a movement of hope. Now, how do we do that? That's a great question. We're not going to answer that question today, though. We will answer that question in the future. Today, I want to answer a different question about our vision, and that's the question, why? Why did God give us the vision to be a movement of hope? Now, if you're new to Kingwood, and there's a lot of folks who are new watching us online and in person, this will be a really good message for you because it'll give you a good picture of who we are as a church. If Kingwood Church is your home, this will be a good message for you because it'll bring clarity to you on why we have the vision that we have. Why the vision that we have is centered in a message of hope. So this morning, I want to give you three reasons, and here they come. Why did God give us the vision to be a movement of hope? Number one, because the world is hopeless. Now you might say, is it really though? Because if you look at a lot of different metrics, there's a lot of pockets and places and people in the world that are doing pretty good. Let me give you some examples. Did you know that we're seeing the greatest improvement in the global standard of living we've ever seen in world history? Did you know that poverty and malnutrition, illiteracy, child labor, infant mortality are falling faster than any time in world history? Now that's good news. It's not a trick question. That's good news. Anytime human suffering goes down, that's good news, right? So there are some really good things happening in the world. And anytime we see a decline in suffering, we want to celebrate it. And by the way, we anecdotally realize in our own lives that everything's not getting worse. I don't know how many of you ever traveled before there was something called a GPS. Anybody? Anybody remember that? When I was in college, I bought this fancy new technology called an Atlas. Anybody over 40? Anybody know what I'm talking about? How many of you owned an Atlas? Yeah, there you go. Right. Yeah, that's right. Almost like a lot of the room. So you know where I'm going. I had an Atlas, and it was like folded in half. I bought it at Sam's Club because that's where I worked at the time. It had a little rollover sleeve with a button on it. And when I got lost, you know, I went to college 15 hours from home. I cut through 4 states, and, you know, you get lost in that amount of time. And there's no Google Earth. There's no GPS. There's no internet. I know. Fathom. Like, how did we even breathe and live and eat? There's no internet. And so what I have to do is when I would, you know, get in trouble is I'd pull off the side of the road, go in the trunk, open the trunk, get the Atlas out. And when you open it, it's like the book of all the names in the world. It's like the size of the dash. You roll it open on the side of the dash of the passenger side, and you're looking across, and everything's microscopic. Do you remember this? All these little roads and highways. Then they'd have a breakout of the metro areas. You're like, I'm not sure what city we're in. Anybody ever have that? And then you look at it, and you're trying to look at this microscopic dot. Then you look around, and you go, it doesn't look like anything here. I don't know where I'm at all. That was the joy. Now here's where I live. I have a GPS on my phone. I don't know how to get anywhere, but I can go everywhere. You know why? Because I just say, navigate to, and you know, in a few minutes, I show up where I'm supposed to go. I know how the traffic's flowing. I know if there's a reroute. Hey, you can't tell me that's not better. Right? Of course it is. That's a lot better. And maybe you just sort of look around your life and say, hey, I pass people all the time. They don't look like, we live in Shelby County, they don't look like they're struggling that much. They look pretty good. Have you seen my neighbor's boat? They go to the lake every weekend. By the way, did you know we're getting a Five Guys and a First Watch and a Cava in Alabaster? Look, see, now I got you. You're here now, right? Things aren't all that bad. It looks like things are getting better. Here's the thing, by a lot of metrics, life's getting a lot better, so how can I say the world is hopeless? Well, because despite things getting a lot better, most of us don't really feel that way. There's a suspicion in our gut that although some things are getting better, there's some things that aren't okay. So let me give you some of those. Mental illness has exploded. Most psychologists describe mental illness and anxiety and depression at epidemic levels. Antidepressants are now a multi-billion dollar industry. The family continues to break down. And so one of the greatest problems in the world for a long time was poverty and hunger. And so you would think as the global standard rises and we move from poverty to plenty, that that would fix all of our problems and everything would be better. But the solutions that we create new problems we didn't have before. So before, one of the problems was world hunger, which is a terrible problem. But as we fix it, you know what we create? We have now so much food we've created. We throw away more food than most generations ate. And now because we have the wrong kinds of food and too much food, we've created a whole health epidemic. Type 2 diabetes and heart disease and all of this is running rampant. So it's interesting, inside our own solutions are new problems. Think about technology. Technology, as I just mentioned with GPS, that's one example of 100. It creates great solutions. However, it also creates new problems. Like what? We're overstimulated, antisocial, anxiety-filled, phone-scrolling control freaks who have life 360 on every human in our life, our dog, and our plants. You can't tell me that's good. And how many times in modern history, I mean, let's just take the last less than 100 years, have we believed that we had the answer to utopia? It was the Industrial Revolution. If we just revolutionized the world through industry and put a factory in every town, all our problems will go away. It was the sexual revolution. If we can just get rid of all these old-fashioned, antiquated ideas about sexuality and let everybody just do what everybody wants to do, then all our problems will go away. How's that one working out? Science. If we can just understand the scientific reason that everything happens. Or money, if we could just get enough prosperity, or technology. Now we're saying, you know what, if we can finally just let AI ramp up, artificial intelligence, we'll eventually create a supercomputer or a robot or a humanoid or something, Terminator, I don't know what it's going to be. But it'll be smarter than humans and it'll solve our problems. Are you suspicious of that at all? That will actually solve all our problems? For all the good the modern world has done, it has failed at answering our deeper questions. And how it feels to me is we're making progress materially in technology, but we're regressing emotionally, relationally, and spiritually. So we live in a confusing time. Because we can give you all kind of data on how things are getting better. We can give you all kind of data on how things are getting worse. What is it? Paul the Apostle described in Romans 8, 22 and 23, the time period that we live in. He said it like this: we know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth. Think about that phrase. The pains of childbirth right up to the present time, not just his present time, our present time too. Not only so, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies. The central picture in this description of the time period that we live in is birth pain. What is he saying? He's saying this season that we live in between the creation of the world and the rapture of the church, and the end of all things, right in the middle of that entire season is marked by suffering and frustration and groaning. So said another way, no matter how much progress we make, no matter how good your health is, no matter how many brunches you eat, no matter how many lattes you have, no matter how many new series you get on TV that makes you feel good, no matter how many lake houses you buy, no matter how high you climb the ladder, it's never going to satisfy you, because up underneath it, there will be an ache inside your soul that will never be satisfied. It will always be unsatisfied, because that is the condition of the human being. That is the human condition. Paul described it in another way in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 12. He said, remember at that time, he's talking about before they found Christ, you were separate from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel, and foreigners to the covenants of the promise, without hope and without God in the world. What is a person without God in a hopeless world? Hopeless. Doesn't matter what you have. Doesn't matter how good your life is. Doesn't matter how smart you are. Doesn't matter how much money you make. Doesn't matter how prosperous or comfortable your life looks. Doesn't matter how significant the work that you do is. Without God is without hope. That's what Paul the Apostle, what is he trying to tell us? The main problem in the world is not the Democrats and it's not the Republicans. It's not the education system, and it's not immigration reform, and it's not that Cracker Barrel changed their logo. I know it's shocking. Some of you went, I don't know about that one. That's not the main problem in the world. Do you know what the main problem is? The human condition. That what's really wrong with the world is not what's out here. What's really wrong with the world is what's in here. That's what the Bible teaches. And the more that we can get right what is in here, the more that's out here will come into alignment to it. Let your kingdom come, let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Heaven flows from the inside out, not from the outside in. So, should we work to make the world a better place? Yes. Watch, here's the distinction. But do not put your hope there. Do not put your hope there, because the world is hopeless regardless of how much better we can make it. So God gave us a message of hope because the world is hopeless. Now that's a very general reason. Why did God give Kingwood Church the message of hope? Number two, because we have faced hopeless hardships. I don't know if you caught on Netflix or last night in the LSU-Clemson game, on the back of the LSU Tiger helmets, there was a purple logo. And that purple logo symbolized the 20-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. And Netflix is running documentaries and, you know, all of this. It's funny, I've been seeing these pop up, and I was like, why are all of a sudden, like, who decided? Who brought in all the media outlets and said, hey, we're going to launch it? And I didn't realize it had been 20 years. Like I can tell you about Hurricane Katrina. I lived on the Gulf Coast when it happened. 1 mile from my house, a 32-foot storm surge wall of water rushed ashore and wreaked havoc on our community. And for 4.5 years, we spent our life living in a disaster zone and rebuilding and rebuilding and rebuilding. About 2 years into that recovery, our youngest son, who was 5 years old, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And if you don't know anything about that, the average type 1 diabetic makes 180 diabetic-related decisions every day. And all of them have a lot of consequences. And if you get 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 of them wrong, your health's going to suffer. And it's going to disrupt everything around you. And we gave him, imagine calling your 5-year-old over and giving him 4 shots a day. We had to give him 4 shots every day. A little while after that, my sister-in-law, who was our worship and youth pastor's wife here, was diagnosed with a disease that took her mother's life. And then the next year, our older son, our 13-year-old, was also diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which, by the way, only happens 5% of the time that siblings contract the same disease. It wasn't long after that, my wife began to exhibit symptoms of the same disease her sister had. And she began to see incredible delusions. She had a total nervous breakdown, and daily life was pretty rough. I was a caregiver for three people who in some ways could not care for themselves. And so I would get the kids up in the morning and get them off to school and come back and take care of her and work as many hours as I could. Our kids played sports, so I had to be at 25 hours of practice and games a week because when they were on the field, they were at highest risk, and I was trying my best to give them a normal life. So I was there at all of it. And we would come in at 6 at night. I would cook dinner, and then I would wash the dishes, or actually, usually I never washed the dishes. I shoved the dirty dishes in the sink, and I would hope by some miracle I could get back to them one day. And then I would do laundry, and then I would get everybody to bed. And then I had to follow our doctor's advice, who said the lowest point in blood sugar in a 24-hour period is 2 a.m. in the morning. So both your boys' sugar needs to be checked at 2 a.m. in the morning, every morning. And so I tried everything to sleep. I tried to go to sleep and then set an alarm and wake up, and then I couldn't go back to sleep after 2, so I'd stay awake till sunrise. So I tried to flip it, stay up till 2, check their sugar, then go to sleep at 2. But I could only do that when both of their sugar was good enough for me to sleep. Sometimes I would have to wake them up and give them something to eat. Sometimes I would have to give them insulin, but then I couldn't go to sleep because I'd wait till the insulin ran off, because if I got it wrong, they'd go in a diabetic coma, which did happen. And you can't imagine how hard it is to sleep lying in bed at night wondering, completely exhausted, out of your mind, wondering, is tonight the night one of my kids goes into a diabetic coma because I'm too tired to remember everything and I forgot something? That's a lot of pressure. And so as my wife continued to degenerate, our life got harder. And I can't tell you the number of times that I had to save her life, because the disease that she had, it caused her to degenerate. And little by little, I had to change her diet because there were foods she could no longer eat. But the only way I would know what she could eat is she would choke on it. And so in restaurants and different places, I'd save her life and try to prevent her from choking. And at the dinner table at night, some night, she would choke to the point tears would come down her face. And I'd look across at her, and she'd be crying, trying to inhale, and she couldn't breathe. And I'd have to get up and try to see if I could unlodge it. And I would wonder, is today the day my wife's going to die in front of my kids as we eat dinner? It was painful. And it was traumatic, and it was hard. In 2018, her sister passed away of the same disease that she had. In 2020, COVID hit. And later that year, I got bit by a tick at Oak Mountain State Park, and I got Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever. And I had Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever for 115 days. Because I was so exhausted, I couldn't tell that I had it. Because exhaustion was normal for me. Sleep deprivation was normal for me. I couldn't tell that I was tired for a new reason. And when we finally caught it, the doctor said, you have acute Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever. And so I went through 2 full rounds of antibiotics, and I was so tired I couldn't hardly walk. And I would sleep in the basement, and I would go upstairs and feed my wife, and I'd go back downstairs and sleep in the basement. And I just lived like that until I got better. There came a day that I couldn't take care of my wife anymore, and so I had to transition her to a nursing home. She had lost weight, and I couldn't keep up. I tried, but I couldn't keep up anymore. And I had to transition her to a nursing home. And while I was in the process of transitioning her to the nursing home, my mom died, who I hadn't seen in about a year and a half because she was frail and COVID was out, and I was afraid if I went and visited her, I might infect her. And so we didn't have much contact, and I didn't talk on the phone much because life was too busy. A few months after my wife was in the nursing home, a wave of COVID went through. So the nursing home locked down. And it was August, And the nursing home said, you can't come inside and visit your wife anymore. And I'm like, I couldn't believe it. I thought, what do you mean I can't see her? How's she going to feel? She's going to be afraid. She's in this environment by herself, and we can't even visit her. So we would go, I would take my boys, and we'd stand at the back of the nursing home. And we would find her window, and we'd walk up to her window and peck on the window. And she would come to the window and look at us. We'd talk to her through the window. And there was a screen, and I tore the screen off and hid it in the bushes so I could see. I hid it in the bushes because I didn't want anybody from maintenance to find it and put it back on. I was battling. And we'd stand there and look at her, and we'd call her on the phone and put the phone on speakerphone, and me and my boys would stand and look at her like an animal in a cage. We'd sit and talk to her. That was their mother. And we talked to her, and we would stand in the August heat as long as we could until we couldn't take it anymore, then we'd have to leave. And so we did that for about 2 months. And I remember about a Christmas or two after that, COVID had passed, and I was able to bring her home for Christmas. And we had a great Christmas together. 2 or 3 days, she got to stay. And then I'll never forget when it was time to go back, my boys had to pick her up in her wheelchair, walk her down the stairs. And as they walked her down, I'll never forget what she said. She was crying, tears coming out of her eyes. And she said, please let me stay here. I don't want to go back. And I said, baby, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I don't have a choice. And it felt like complete failure because I knew the only reason that she was there is because I couldn't take care of her. And it felt like complete failure. Then in 2023, I had a mysterious spinal injury. No doctor could tell me how I got it. I went to bed normal one night. I woke up the next day and I was crippled. Half my body wouldn't work. And I went to specialists for months. I went to 5 or 6 specialists, and we'd tell the same story, and I would look at them and say, this is what happened, and they'd all look at me and say, that's not how it happened. And I would say, well, here I am. So what are you going to do about that? Finally, the last neurosurgeon told me, he said, you have this injury on your spine, and you have pressure on your spine, and it's mashing your nerves, and if you don't have spinal surgery, you're going to lose the use of your legs. And so I had to pray about that and made the decision to have the surgery. In May of 2023, I had double spinal fusion surgery. 4 months later, it takes a year to 18 months to recover from that. 4 months later, my wife passed away. And so that was a difficult thing. Last year, my dad was in ICU and nearly died. We were on alert any minute. We didn't know if we were all going to get called in. And my sister got liver cancer, and 4 of our staff transitioned out of our church. Now, that would be a lot if that's all that happened. Before I went through it, my father-in-law, who's here, Pastor Ron Cox, that pastored this church for 35 years, he went through it. And his wife got the disease, and she suffered for years, and they walked through it, and she passed away. And then my wife and her sister that I just told you about are his 2 daughters. So he lost his wife and both his daughters to the same disease. And my sister-in-law was married to our youth and worship pastor, and we walked through that whole journey with all of them. And I don't know many families that have suffered as long as we have. There are, I'm sure there's some, but I don't know many. But it wasn't just a burden on us. It was our burden primarily. But because we're intertwined with this church, it was your burden. And many of you carried it. And it's a weight that just sat on our church. year after year after year after year. And now you're like, why did you tell me all that? Well, welcome to Kingwood. Aren't you glad you came today? Aren't you encouraged? You're like, man, I could have been at the lake. It's Labor Day. I'm here hearing this stuff. This is crazy. What does all of it mean? What does all of it mean? Because here's the thing I can't reconcile in my mind. Please don't tell me that it was meaningless. Don't tell me that. That would destroy me. Please don't tell me that it was wasted. All the suffering was wasted and it was worthless and it was meaningless. Please don't tell me that. And I can tell you this, there are a lot of days that it felt like that. Why did God allow that burden one after another to not just sit on our family, but to sit on this church? Why did he trust us with that burden? Here's why. God used that suffering, listen to this, to shape the message of hope inside of us. How can I say that? Here's how. We've been to the bottom. We've been about as low as you can go. There's not much more you can do to people that haven't been done to us. And when we got to the bottom, do you know what we found? Hope. We found hope at the bottom, and if we can find it, you can find it. If there's hope for people like us, there's hope for you. So God was chiseling away. Did he cause it? No, he didn't cause it. But he didn't stop it. I mean, at least I couldn't. If he did, let me know, because I didn't notice. He didn't stop it. But he used it because he's redemptive. He used it because he won't waste anything. He used it because what the enemy meant for bad, God meant for good. That's what he did. And so he's fashioned inside this church a message that can look into the darkest part of life and say, there's still hope. There's still hope. And it reminds me of Abraham. Many of you know the story of Abraham. He was nearly 90 years old, and the angel came and said, you're going to be the father of many nations. And he's looking, and his wife's laughing in the tent and saying, are you kidding me? We're too old. I'm almost 90. His wife's laughing. She's like, I'm barren. I can't have kids now. The promise is not going to happen. It took too long. We're too old. All of the things, right? And the Bible says that Abraham was good as dead. But let me tell you what Paul said about Abraham in Romans 4:18. He said, against all hope, Abraham in hope believed and so became the father of many nations. Against all hope, against all logic, against all reason, you're too old, too much has happened, you're too tired, you're too wounded, you're too broken, you're too limited, you're too small, you're not educated enough, you don't have the right pedigree, you didn't come from the right place, you're a first generation Christian, all of the stuff that the enemy will tell you, but you know what the Bible says? That Abraham, against all natural hope, he hoped and believed in God. That's our story. That's our church's story. That's our story. Now look, that doesn't mean that I have all the answers. I probably got less answers than I ever had. I've got more unanswered questions than I have answered ones. If you're looking for all the answers to life, you came to the wrong church. We are not the answer church. But let me tell you what we are. We're the hope church. Because there's points in life you're going to come to, you got no answers. But you know what will hold you when you got no answers? You got hope. And hope will hold you when the answers can't be found. This isn't my story. And it's not just our family story. It's our story. What do I mean by that? Well, some of you didn't go through the suffering that we did. You didn't feel it. It didn't You didn't carry the weight of it, but you know what you did? You stood with us. And so that makes our story your story. And then some of you say, well, I didn't know you or whatever, or maybe you had things going on in your life. You said we couldn't really stand with you. But and maybe you're even new to Kingwood. You've just come in the last month or two or year or whatever. Maybe you're part of those people we just put on the screen that you just came to faith in Jesus. You know what? It's part of your story. You know why? Because you received hope here. And so whether you stood through the suffering or you received hope, it's all of our story. It's our story. God made us a movement of hope. So I think if God were to allow us to rewrite this passage, not about Abraham, but about Kingwood, I think this is how he would write it. Against all hope and hope, we believed God and became, would you say it with me? A movement of hope. Let's say it again. Against all hope and hope, we believed and so became a movement of hope. That's why. That's what it's about. That's what God was up to. That's what God's doing. Because you know why? Man, people need hope. Whether they're up and out or down and out, they need hope. God called us to be a movement of hope because we faced hopeless hardships. Number three, God called us to be a movement of hope because hope has a name. And his name is Jesus. Come on, his name is Jesus. Hope is not a theory, and hope is not a concept, and hope is not even really a belief. Hope is a person, and his name is Jesus. You know, to a lot of people in the world, hope is a verb. It's something they do. I hope it doesn't rain. I hope this conflict works out. I hope the economy gets better. I hope Cracker Barrel will change their logo back. You know, it's like wishful thinking. Right? But hope, as believers, we hope good things will happen. We hope God will move in certain ways. But it's more than that for us. It's not just a verb, it's a noun. Hope is something you have. It's not something you wish for. It's something you've already received. Because if you have Jesus, you have the greatest source of hope in the universe living inside you, breathing life inside you, breathing strength to your soul. You have hope. You don't long for hope, you have it. 1 Peter 1:3, the Apostle Peter's been called the Apostle of Hope. And let's read what he said about it. He said, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead." See, here's the thing. Jesus not only made the claim, he proved it. He proved that he is the source of hope. How? On the cross and in his resurrection. Now, you remember this picture that Paul gave us in Romans chapter 8, that this the condition that the world is in labor pains. Let me tell you what Jesus did. Jesus walked into the labor and delivery department of the universe, and he laid his life down, and he sacrificed himself and died, and he resurrected on the third day, and he became our living hope in the middle of labor pain. In the middle, when the world was at its worst, Jesus walked right in the middle and became our living hope. And he's given you, if you're a Christian, he's birthed you into a living hope. What does that mean? He's birthed you into Jesus himself because he's already gone through death and he's already defeated it. And when he came back from the grave, he looked at you and I in the eye and he said, "Come on and follow me. I'm going to lead you to eternal life. I'm going to lead you to the fulfillment of this living and new hope." I don't know if you've ever heard this phrase. It's kind of become popular in our day and age, kind of cliche. The best is yet to come. You heard that? Thanks, Skippy. The best is yet to come. The best is yet to come, you know. And it's kind of the philosophy that of encouragement that, like, if you're going through something hard, just hang on. Because in this life, if you'll just hang on, things will always get better. And when I think about that, I remember I walked into a church one day and they had it hanging in their foyer on the wall. And everything in me wanted to run over there and tear it down. Except it wasn't our church. So I was like, well, I can't really do that, can I? I'd be a vandal then. But I wanted to just rip it off the wall because I don't think it belongs in a church. I think it belongs in a restaurant or a coffee shop. The best is yet to come. If we're talking about this life is false hope. Why do I say that? Because you can't put your hope in things perpetually and always getting better. Because things don't always get better. We have a young lady in our church that we've been ministering to who's on her way back to the Ukraine to live in a bomb shelter. Should we tell her that the best is yet to come? What do you do with Christians living underground in Iran or North Korea? Or what do you tell someone who's lost a loved one? Or you tell someone whose dream has died? Or you tell someone whose child is suffering the best? What do you tell someone who's crippled for life? If you would have hung "the best is yet to come" in my wife's nursing home room, I would have taken it off the wall and thrown it in the trash. Because her life didn't get better for 11 years, it got worse. I can't think of a flimsy, more sissy saying than "the best is yet to come." It's not even good theology. What am I saying to you? Sometimes things don't get better. Sometimes they do. And we pray for them to. And we long for them to. And we work for them to. But sometimes, despite your best effort and all your faith, things don't get better. Sometimes they get worse. So what am I saying to you? Don't put your hope in the outcome. Put your hope in Jesus. Because whether things get better or things get worse, you're going to still have hope. You're going to be okay. You're going to get through this life. And let me tell you the best news of all. And let me tell you why our vision is to be a movement of hope. Because we got to have something that we will build our life on that will not fail. Don't put your hope in progress. Don't put your hope in dreams. Don't put your hope in people. Don't put your hope in things. Don't put your hope in ideas. Don't put your hope in government. You got to put your hope in something that won't fail. And all those things, according to Romans 8, are going to fail. What do you put your hope in? In Jesus. Because he, you know what our message is? Jesus will not fail. How do we know? We've been to the bottom. We've been to the bottom and he didn't fail. Now, here's the good news. Do you know what comes after labor pain? Do you know what comes after labor pain? The baby. Come on, ladies. Where are the moms at on that? Like, thank God. What comes after labor pain? The baby. Joy. New life. The pain of labor is quickly forgotten, but the baby remains. The good news is we might be in labor pain now, but there's coming a new heaven and a new earth with a Messiah who will reign over it all, and we will forget all the labor and the pain of this world, and we'll live forever. That's hope. That's what hope looks like. And when he gets here and he sets his kingdom up, he will reverse the curse of sin and every bad thing it ever caused. Now that's hope. And that hope will actually get you through whatever life manages to do to you. Would you stand with me this morning? Our worship team's coming and they're going to lead us in this song called Living Hope. And I want to ask you, close your eyes right now. If you're online, you can join us for this and just say, Lord, help me to fix my eyes this morning on Jesus Christ, who is my living hope. Help me to fix my eyes this morning on the author and the finisher of my faith. Come on this morning and let's sing together, Living Hope.